a.m. and from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Public swim is Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 p.m. and Saturday from noon to 5 p.m. The pool is closed on Sunday. There will be special hours when Urbana School District is not in session or when there are swim meets. All hours of operation are contingent on staffing levels. For more information, call the Urbana Indoor Aquatic Center at 217-384-7665. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its Board of Directors, Associate Station Manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Alan Bergman, Director of the Partners in Policymaking Program in Illinois. But first, disability news for the week of February 27th, 2023. A practice known as subminimum wage for people with disabilities who work in sheltered workshops declined by more than half in the past 10 years, according to the Government Accountability Office. The GAO's report released this month said that the number of service providers using the model also declined by half during the same period. As of August 2021, fewer than 1,300 providers were authorized to pay subminimum wage. The practice became popular in the 1930s when a new law allowed employers to obtain what's called a special 14C certificate from the U.S. Department of Labor, allowing them to hire people with disabilities at less than the federal minimum wage. In more recent years, the focus has been shifting to competitive integrated employment and away from subminimum wage, accompanied by changes to federal law, with increasing numbers of cities and states banning the practice. For example, Congress limited the use of subminimum wage employment in 2014 with the Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. As a result, people with disabilities age 24 or younger cannot work for subminimum wage without using a number of transition services, pursuing employment through the Department of Voc Rehab, and assuring that they've been provided information and referrals to other options for employment in their area. In addition, people being paid less than minimum wage must receive career counseling and information about training opportunities once every 6 months during the first year and once a year after that. In the GAO study, it was learned that almost all workers employed with subminimum wages had intellectual and developmental disabilities. The majority earned less than $3.50 an hour, and much less than that. According to Senator Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, one of the lawmakers who requested that the GAO investigate the practice, quote, paying workers less than the minimum wage is unacceptable. Everyone deserves to be paid a fair wage, and Americans with disabilities are no exception. The report shows that we still have much more to do to lift up people with disabilities by raising their wages and creating competitive jobs in workplaces that employ both workers with and without disabilities, end quote. According to the U.S. Justice Department, the Anchorage, Alaska School District illegally locked students with disabilities in seclusion rooms and restrained them in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act. As part of their settlement, school officials have agreed to end the practice of using seclusion rooms and to reform their restraint practices following the investigation, which started in 2020. The settlement follows similar agreements with school districts in Florida, Iowa, Maryland, and Indiana. The Justice Department found that 82% of students subjected to seclusion and/or restraint were students with disabilities, who make up only 15% of the district's student population. The district's use of restraint and seclusion resulted in students missing instructional time, and some students subjected to prolonged and repeated seclusion engaged in self-harm and expressed suicidal ideation while secluded. The schools at the center of the investigation have isolation rooms specifically built for that purpose that lock from the outside with a camera installed in the room. The district did not limit its use of restraint and seclusion to emergency situations. Last week, Anchorage Superintendent Jarrett Bryant said that the district's goal is to, quote, replace seclusion rooms with better alternatives that more appropriately support students in distress, end quote. Bryant did not know what prompted the investigation in Anchorage, but said it is one of more than 40 larger school districts facing Justice Department investigations. The settlement agreement between the district and the Justice Department orders that the district will end the practice of secluding students in all schools or locking them alone in a room by the beginning of the next school year. Also, seclusion practice in district schools, except those that cater to students with special needs, should end by March 20th of this year. The district will also hire a new administrator to oversee restraint practices for every school investigated by the department that will create classroom plans to discourage the use of physical restraint and ensure that teachers use de-escalation techniques. And finally, on a somewhat more positive note, in a report from the U.S. Department of Education's National Center for Educational Statistics, the number of students with disabilities graduating from high school is up across the country. However, federal data suggests that outcomes continue to vary by state. The high school graduation rate for students with disabilities increased overall to 70.6% for the 2019-20 academic year. According to the report, that's only an increase of 2.4% from the previous year. The numbers in the report reflect those with disabilities who graduated with a regular diploma within 4 years. As in previous years, graduation rates for students with disabilities remained inconsistent across the country. At the high end, Oklahoma reported that 88.1% of students graduated, while Mississippi reported the lowest rate of just 55.4%. The Education Department said that the discrepancy is possibly due to differences in how states define and calculate for certain subgroups, especially students with disabilities. The National Center for Education Statistics report showed that the overall graduation rate for high school students during the 2019-2020 school year was 86.5%, up from 85.8% the previous year. And that's the news for this week. Just a note before we get to our interview with Alan Bergman, Carol Rosen of the Arc of Illinois will be on next week to get us updated on events and efforts related to Shoat Developmental Center, which we've spent much time talking about in recent months. But in preparation for that, to read updates, check out the Facebook page for McManus Consulting. Ed McManus has kept us well informed about the goings-on in the state of Illinois. Anyway, that's the news for this week, and stay tuned for our interview. And you are tuned to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm Vicki Nicewander. This is Disability Beat. And I'm joined today on the phone by Alan Bergman, who has been on the program before, but it's been a while. I think it was pre-COVID, wasn't it, Alan? Probably the last class you had with Partners in Policymaking, but they're having another class. And this is such a huge opportunity for families and people with disabilities to become strong advocates. So I'm really excited about the program, and I'm also excited that you can be on today.
Thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. There is so much work to be done. And I could not have asked for better cue lines than all the news updates we provided.
It's
every one of those will be covered in one way or another in Partners in Policymaking in terms of what is the issue, where is the state of Illinois, where are the best practices, and why is Illinois such a laggard on almost every one of the issues you just raised? If we're not last, we're between 44th and 50th. So yeah. I can come back to some of that. But we have so much work to do, and we need knowledgeable, well-trained advocates who are prepared to spend time and effort on systems change, not just at the local school level or the local county level. That's important, but we have work to do with the Illinois state government, the legislature, and the executive branch to help them understand that we are wasting lives and money by doing what the state continues to do.
Why don't you talk, Alan, a little bit about some of the topics that will be covered and the structure of Partners in Policymaking. How does it work, and who will be there? Who do you like to have as a part of the group, and what are the expectations for people who are members of the class?
Great. It's an open, competitive process, and there is an application. And this year, we're very pleased to have it available in both English and Spanish. I'll come back to that later. We can enroll up to 30 persons per class, and we will have three classes. The first one will start this May, another one November, and another one September in 2024, so a total of 90.
Mm-hmm.
We are looking for diversity, both geographic diversity. We really want to reach into some of the more rural communities. Nothing against Metro Chicago or Burlington, Springfield, but we really want to go further south. We want to go out into the west. We want to go up further north so that we make sure we are building what I'm calling an army in every county in the state of Illinois, and that we also now have expanded our enrollment. As you know, in the past, it was only for parents of children who were still in school with a developmental disability or adults self-advocates over the age of 21 or 22.
Mm-hmm.
We are now adding adult siblings because there's been a real growth in that movement. And we are also adding those people who are now supporters of somebody with a developmental disability through supported decision-making. I'm sure you've probably covered that at least once in one of your shows.
Mm-hmm.
And we're also enrolling, for the first time, guardians. So we will have the diversity of that population, and we will also have racial, ethnic diversity. We provide, if needed, translation on site at no cost to the participant. And I just so I can say it now, and then I'll come back and talk about enrollment. When we have the on-site, which will be 4 weekends because we're also doing some virtual, those will be in Burlington Normal. And, pardon me, those are all covered, all your expenses, your hotel, your food, mileage reimbursement, train, if people take the train. All of those costs are covered. Your cost is making the investment of your time. And again, I want people to understand this is leadership development training. It is hard work. It is not a walk or a ride in the park. So we're looking for people who can commit to the time and to do something with it. They'll get to do a project, either individual or as part of a small group. And then when they graduate, we expect them to move on and go into a leadership role, whether it's local, state, or federal. We have a couple of people, and from the last three classes, who are now on local school boards. The current chair of the Illinois Board Advisory Board for Special Education is a partner's grad, and we have two other members on there. We have three on the ARC Illinois Board. We have six on the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities, two at Parent Training and Information Centers, and I could go on and on because they just keep happening, that people, when they have the skill and the knowledge, really are needed to contribute to decision-making and leadership in this state. And anybody who's looking hasn't found it difficult to get a volunteer or a paid employment position. The new director of the Illinois Respite System statewide is a partner's grad and a mom. So we're really beginning to make the impact, but we need a lot more people to get this job done, and it does take time. And I'll just walk through the dates just so people will know what we're talking about for this next class, and it will change. In person, May 5th and 6th, that's a Friday, Saturday, starting at 11:30, finishing at 3:30 Saturday, June 23rd, 24th, August 4th and 5th, October 6th and 7th. The virtual sessions are going to be on a lot of Fridays, Saturdays, 9 to 1, and then alternatively on a Wednesday, 6 to 9. I'm not going to go through all those dates. People can look at that in the brochure.
Mm-hmm.
The topics we cover are basically everything. We will cover the history of disability in the world and in the United States, and it's pretty ugly, as you know,
mm-hmm.
And still ugly in some places. We will cover the history of the parent movement, the history of the self-advocacy movement, so that you'll see how all of this has led to a lot of the work at the federal level. We will spend the day on inclusive education with a message loud and clear for your audience. When staff are well-trained, every child, regardless of disability, can thrive in the neighborhood appropriate age classroom with their peers, including those kids who often are put in seclusion, restraint, or time out because the staff have not been trained in non-aversive techniques and redirection, not because we don't have them, so they just lock them up or they call the cops.
Mm-hmm.
How sad. And it's happening all over, including in Illinois. We will cover preschool and child care inclusion. We will cover the range of assistive technology and devices, often not used and not well understood, children and adults, to give people greater independence and control. We have an overarching set of values and outcomes from the Developmental Disabilities Act. Independence, exerting choice and control is what that means. Interdependence, being part of a whole larger community. Productivity, making a valued contribution for pay or for volunteering or internship, not for subminimum wage. I'll come back to that if there's time. That
mm-hmm.
was a 1938 policy. Integration, inclusion, and belonging. And belonging is the newest term, which means you're a valued member of your community. You're not just socially there or physically there. People see you as a valued contributor in the community, whether that's in a social situation, in a work situation, a place of faith, whatever it might be. We cover all of that. We cover supported and customized employment, not well done in this state. Those are the ways to get people out of subminimum wage. We cover meaningful day based on, again, interests, preferences, and strengths of the person, not on deficits. We've rejected the medical model. You'll learn about that. Not that we're denying disability, but it doesn't define you or your child, Vicki, any more than either of my two adult daughters.
Mm-hmm.
It's a characteristic, but so is their height, their weight, their eye color, their religion, and all that other stuff. And we've got to get rid of the stigma and stereotype, and we teach people that. People also learn how to give 3-minute speeches and get comfortable. They may come in real shy and retiring. By the time they graduate, get out of the way, they're willing to stand up any place and give their 3-minute or 5-minute speech or testimony or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
We will cover residential. We will talk about supported living, not supportive housing, where people live in a home of their own with supports as needed. Illinois and its waiver still does not offer it. It has been legal in the United States in Medicaid since 1990. That's 33 years ago. That gives you a sense of why places like Chote are still around, because
mm-hmm.
we haven't built the infrastructure in our state and made that investment. So we'll spend time on that. We'll talk about the Illinois legislature, the legislative process, a weekend in Springfield. How do you advocate? How do you communicate with the legislature? How do you use the internet system that this state has to make your voice heard? I'm sure Carol will talk some about that when you have her on. We then spend another side, the federal side, because all of the federal laws today are amazing. The problem isn't the law. The problem is implementation on the ground.
Right.
Whether we're talking special ed, voc rehab, Medicaid waivers, early childhood, the laws are all very clear and consistent. We talk about ABLE accounts and benefits counseling, because the myth is if you go to work, you'll lose your benefits. That's not true. We talk about leadership skills. We talk about serving on nonprofit boards and what you ought to look for in doing that. and probably anything else that might come up. We talk a lot about language, because you did mention somebody in one of the articles used the term special needs. We teach people not to use that. That's a euphemism. The word is disability. Get with it. It's a lot better than idiot, imbecile, moron, MR, and all those other words that we used to use in the past. But disability is the word. It's Disability Education Act, ADA, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the other thing on the behavior, we teach what is called positive behavioral intervention support. That isn't done in all the states, but we do it here, and we bring in an expert. Again, people don't even know what it is. School districts don't know. And here's the tragedy, and then I'll try to answer any questions, is we have parents who have come out of this very knowledgeable and assertive, and I won't name the family, but this is in the southern part of the state. A mom got really excited as her son was going into his junior year in high school about customized employment, and all of a sudden could see him working in a real job for real pay. Goes to the IEP meeting. They do the usual stuff. And she says, can we start talking about John going to work? And they looked at her and said, what do you mean? Well, could we do something called discovery, which is the first step in customized employment? I want to give the staff credit. They were honest with her. And they said, we don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. We've never, and this is 2 years ago, we've never heard of customized employment. We don't know what discovery is. But you know the Judge So-and-So Center about six blocks from here? Well, when his kid was here, he opened that so there'd be something for him to do. We already know that's where your son's going. Talk about labeling and stigma and stereotype. They couldn't even consider this young man having a real job. How sad.
Yeah.
The mom knew more than they did.
And that's
okay.
The way it is
in
Illinois. Oh, absolutely.
In a lot of places.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are the biggest issues in this? I know there's probably not enough time to talk about this. The biggest issues for you personally in the state of Illinois. I know that CHOATE is a big, big deal for you as well. But there's other stuff,
yeah,
too.
Well, I think inclusive education,
mm-hmm,
raising the real issue here is raising expectations. And if I could anonymously do a survey of every member of the Illinois General Assembly, no offense, I would not be surprised if most of them had very low expectations. If I said cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, spina bifida, wheelchair user, intellectual disability, automatically they're going to pop up with what they believe is what that is based on where they grew up and what they learned culturally. And mm-hmm, I'm not saying they're bigots, but I love the new term implicit bias that we use with racism. I think the vast majority of people in Illinois who are in positions of authority have implicit bias and low expectations based on a label. And that's what school districts still do, with a few exceptions. Up here we have True North now, with a full inclusion director who's going to flip the co-op upside down. He's having some good successes, but not total, because there's great resistance. There is great resistance to changing the program model for them. And what we need to get to is people to understand individual is individual. And I'm going to share this one with you because you'll appreciate it. A colleague is now the employment specialist for the National Down Syndrome Society. He's on the North Carolina Council. He's got a sibling who's working who experiences Down syndrome. He gets a call last spring as the pandemic is rolling out or away from an employer. So-and-so with this company, and we're reopening. And John has come back to work. He's a person with Down syndrome, and he's been one of our best workers, but we're short workers. And here's the quote, can you get me another John? So you think we're making progress. But again, for this employer, every man with Down syndrome is a carbon copy of John. And Ryan didn't want to offend him, so he said, let me get back to you. And I spent some time walking him through the whole description of characteristics. So you think we're making progress, but again, get me a carbon copy or get me three Johns. And he had to say, I don't have somebody else with Down syndrome who can do that. I have other people who can do other things, or maybe I can help you find somebody with a different kind of disability. So we have so much work to do, which is why I personally am adamant about school inclusion starting in preschool, in kindergarten, where kids grow up appreciating what we now call neurodiversity. They'll ask a question, and then they move right on and it works beautifully. Kids are going to play with kids. Why they have a wheelchair? Their legs don't work good. Oh, okay, fine. Can I hop on and get a ride? Fine. They're going to at least build a relationship.
Well, if I could say, Alan, you know, I think that inclusion and the lack of it sets the stage for what happens to people after they graduate. You know, if the rest of the students understand that this person has value and capabilities and, you know, hopes and dreams, then, you know, they're going to be okay with it if they're included in that class with that person and then graduate and they are business owners or, you know, whatever that can work with or hire. I think that would make the biggest difference of everything.
I couldn't agree more. If I was czar for a day starting this September, every school district, kids are fully included with appropriately trained staff. In 12 years, we will have made a dramatic change because you're right. They're going to find out some of these kids who have a disability might have better skills than they do in certain areas, better knowledge. There's a young lady now over in Georgia who's a tour guide at the Baseball Hall of Fame or one of the Sports Hall of Fames. When she got interviewed, she knew more than the staff interviewing her on baseball statistics or sports statistics. They hired her as a greeter, and now she's the chief tour guide. Young woman with Down syndrome. Oh, my goodness. How could it happen?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So where do people go if they're interested in being a part of Partners in Policymaking?
Okay. We have just established a link for people to go and get the application in English or in Spanish. And I knew you were going to ask me, and now let's see if I can remember it. I sent it to you. By chance, do you happen to have it handy?
I can look while you talk about something else.
Yeah. Applications for this class close at 5 p.m. on March 11th, so you've still got plenty of time to get the application. If you have questions, there's a contact person, Jan Bergman, who is my wife and happens to also be the coordinator. We want people to apply. We want people to get excited about this, but you do have to make the commitment of the time because you have to attend all sessions in order to complete and get a graduation certificate, which is valuable as you're going to look for paid work or volunteer opportunities.
And so as a former graduate of Partners in Policymaking way back in 1997, I encourage people to be a part of it. Whether you think you have the time or not, it's worth making the time to do it. I found the website that you're talking about.
It's not a web, it's just a link. So go ahead.
It's the link, https://tinyurl.com/ILPIP applications. I'll put that on my Facebook page so people can find it that way.
Just got this set up about a week ago because people were asking us, and it's a lot easier to do that than send me an email and then my having to email back a copy or whatever as an attachment. So it's there. It works beautifully. We have a new person helping us with technology. But, yeah, as Vicki said, she's a graduate. Speak to others. Find out who might be in your town. And it's really an exciting, I've been involved in it since it started in Minnesota in 1987, do it in many states as well. And the results that come out of this are amazing, including people running for public office. The highest one we have is in New Hampshire. Former Governor Maggie Hassan, who is Ben's mom, young man with quite a bit of disability from cerebral palsy, was fully included. First state to close institution, first state to eliminate subminimum wage, what a novel idea, is now a member of the United States Senate, proudly wearing her family advocacy hat and very involved with Senator Casey, who you mentioned, and others leading the disability agenda. So you can go that far. There are many others who have made national prominence. It's all in your hands, but please,
you have to do it.
Interested, do it. And if you don't get into this class, we'll have you apply for the next one or the one after that, and maybe there'll be more after that. But at least Perfect. We're going to do three rounds.
We are out of time, Ellen. Sorry to cut you off, but we have to go, and I will put information on the Facebook page for people to sign up and be a part of a great program. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Vicki. Really appreciate your
this and other episodes of Disability